Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
EU Startups Podcast is brought to you by Vonta. If you're building a SaaS business, achieving compliance with SOC 2, ISO 27001, or other in-demand frameworks can unlock major growth for your company and establish customer trust. However, this process is often time-intensive and costly. Vonta automates your compliance work, getting you audit ready quickly and saving you up to 85% of associated costs. And Vonta scales with your business, helping you continuously monitor compliance, unify risk management, and streamline security reviews. Join 8,000 global companies like Synethia, Flow Health, and Alica Bank that use Vonta to build trust and prove security in real time. Our audience gets a special offer of $1,000 off Vonta at vonta.com/EU startups. That's vonta.com/EU startups.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. My guest today is Julia Hawkins, general partner at Local Globe and Latitude. Welcome, Julia. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Great to be here.
Julia, so let's dive right into it. I know that you've invested in, you know, transformative companies in health and deep tech. What's one trend you think is critically overlooked in healthcare innovation right now?
I think that's such a great question, Marcin. Thank you so much. I think as I think about that, one of the problems that I see that is currently not being tackled so much by startups that I'm seeing is actually drug shortages. So in the news, we've heard of many patients that are not able to get their prescription, so medication, whether it be for ADHD or for HRT, so for menopause or for diabetes. Many of these medicines are not available in local pharmacies. They're being rationed, so you may get half of your prescription, or you even have to maybe go to hospitals to get your prescriptions because they're being basically sent just there. And so I think this is a huge problem area. I think it has to do with both manufacturing, it has to do with supply chains, has to do obviously with Brexit, but actually not only, because it's a problem across Europe and actually more widely than that. Yeah. And so if any founders are building in that space, I'd love to hear from them.
Amazing, Julia. This topic is especially close to my heart, since my wife is working in AstraZeneca with, you know, and bringing drugs to market, and I know like how hard of a process it is and how long time it gets. Speaking of founders, you've spoken about, you know, the power of founders with, you know, unique life shaping experiences. How do you think your own experience navigating the healthcare system for your daughter? Because I know that maybe you can also give a bit of context to that question after I finish asking it. You know, how does it influence, like this kind of experience influences the founders you're drawn to?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give some context there. Yeah. So yeah, my daughter has a rare genetic condition and she's now 10 years old. But when she was born, obviously getting the diagnosis to her condition was pretty challenging. And then obviously navigating the health system, as well as finding academics and researchers that are doing research into her condition, as well as building a patient community and trying to bring new therapeutics to market. All of these aspects of the health system is something that I experienced up close, and actually what got me interested first and foremost in investing in health and in deep tech. And so I do actually, I mean, I have to check myself because I, you know, in terms of just bias against being drawn to founders that have had a profound life-changing experience, because I think there are many founders that are phenomenal who have not had something terrible happen to them. Right. But I am drawn to founders who have a very clear why this, why them, why now, and who are able to articulate that very clearly. And I think that's not only important to be able to tell a story to investors, but obviously to tell a story to inspire others to join them. And so I think that's obviously one aspect. The other aspect is that, you know, building companies is so phenomenally hard, and in particular in health and in bio. And so having a higher purpose or a higher mission that goes beyond making money, I think is actually really important. So I think I do check myself, but I also am looking for founders who have a clear articulation of why this makes sense for them.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And of course, there's a number of founders that, like, you know, they didn't have any like major event or experience in life that changed it, and therefore they became great. But also there's many stories that probably we know of that, you know, like there is this kind of pattern that, okay, something happens in your life, some you're exposed to really like either by yourself or to someone close to you. And then you're kind of, you know, getting passionate about it, getting personal connection to it, and you're obsessed to solve it. And yeah, this is how it works. Julia, I know that, you know, speaking actually of those obsessed founders, you've backed some major disruptors like Oxford Nanopore. What's one lesson you think each of these founders could teach others in the health tech space?
That's a great question as well. You know, I think Oxford Nanopore is obviously a hugely important company in the UK, in the deep tech space, in the science field. I think, you know, the first thing to say is that it actually took them 16 years to go from lab to listing. It took them 12 years to get to product market fit with the MinION, so with a product that enables basically portable sequencing, long read sequencing, which was obviously groundbreaking. But you could also say, obviously, that's a really long time.
Yeah, it is.
And that it requires a lot of capital to get them to that point. But I think, you know, the thing that we mustn't forget is that creating iconic companies does take time. And many iconic companies have had, you know, near failures. Like, don't forget, like Apple nearly went under. NVIDIA obviously started in 1993, but actually no one really heard of them until 3 years ago. And the same Microsoft like had a massive turnaround from 2014 when Satya took over and started shifting things towards AI. So I think, you know, the story to really remember about Oxford Nanopore and the lesson is that it's still early innings. And it still takes time. And for iconic companies, there are going to be massive ups, but also massive downs. It's not a linear path. And I think great founders, they know this and they don't care. And they will just push through. And so that's what I think the lesson is when it comes to Oxford Nanopore.
This is amazing. I love it. And I 100% agree. Like, this, like, it just takes time for iconic, like, you know, companies to be built and for people to, like, I don't know, change other people's lives. It doesn't happen overnight. And especially like technologies in health and deep tech, like they just take time to develop and commercialize and bring the value. I love also to hear that, you know, like there are investors like you with a mindset like this and actually who help make it happen. Speaking of the healthcare system, it often feels like a maze.
Yeah.
If you could wave a wand and like a magic wand and fix one systematic issue, what would it be?
I would definitely try to fix procurement. I think that procurement of innovative solutions is currently really broken. It takes too long. It's too cumbersome. In the UK, you know, companies still have to go from either trust to trust, so hospital to hospital or system to system. And it takes too long. It's really challenging for companies to manage that.
Yeah.
If Wes Streeting was sitting here and talking to us, I would have two suggestions that he could do straight away. I know that he's working on the 10-year plan for the NHS, and obviously there's a lot of goodwill, and already the report that's been published is definitely in the right direction. But I'd say, you know, one thing that you could do is to have a quarterly meeting with all of the procurement leads. You could have 10 startups that are presenting to you, and you could do a deep dive into whether it be to showcase their work, and it could be around specific themes or policy areas that are priorities. Easy to organize. I'm happy to suggest companies as well. And the second thing would be that every NHS procurement decision has to be basically focused on an outcome, one. Mm-hmm. And two, it has to be completed within a 12-week time period. Yeah. And I think that's really important so that, you know, startups can start to manage their cash flow, and so that they're not being, just that there isn't a decision, a finite decision within a set period of time.
Mm. I love it, Julia. So thoughtful. Let's talk about building teams. I know that building teams is, you know, critical focus for you. What do you think is the biggest mistake founders make when it comes to talent and team culture early on?
Yeah, I think a couple of things that I've seen. One is that founders may settle too quickly for team members, as in to hire someone too quickly. That isn't quite right. And that obviously then takes time to unpick.
Yeah.
I think related to this is too that they may not have established the core values up front, as in articulated the values that they are really wanting every single team member to embody, which unites people across a team. And then the third thing also related to this is that they then don't get the right blend of both experience and raw talent. So, you know, that what we have in our team, which I absolutely love, is that you have obviously Robin, who is, you know, probably one of the most experienced investors and who is such a guiding light for all of us here, as well as, you know, investors who are just coming up or just getting started. I mean, Ash is a great example. And I love having this mix of experience and raw talent within a team, and so and being able to pair them up, I think those three aspects are things that I really look for and that I try to encourage teams to get right.
Yeah, I know that you also prioritize, you know, both ambition and diversity in founders. How do you evaluate whether a founder truly understands and embodies inclusivity in their vision?
You know, I think it's actually a very difficult thing to assess, because it's not going to be something that you can really see in a deck or that you can see without spending time with a founder. Yeah. But I think when you do start to spend time with them, I think there are things that they either say or actions that they take that will lead you to understand how they think about diversity or how they think about team building. Mm-hmm. You know, one example is DJ Collins is a founder of Early, who was, you know, he really wanted to ensure that Carl Loco was able to invest in the company. And at the time there was a challenge, he couldn't quite do it, but really moved things to make sure that was possible. And for me, that just made me understand how he thinks about that as a core issue for him.
Yeah.
And then lastly, I would say that, you know, I really like to do one-on-ones with founders in a team, because I think it's really interesting to hear how founders talk about the other co-founder, like how they talk about each other when the other person isn't there. Mm-hmm. I think all of these things are very subtle, but I think are what I guess I look for.
Yeah. So let's maybe go a bit even deeper into this space. What qualities or insights, you know, set apart founders who successfully lead I don't know, can be in health tech or generally tech companies versus those who fall short despite great ideas?
Yeah, I think the one thing that I've noticed is obviously the ability to build teams. I think, the ability to build teams and products that consumers actually love. I think, you know, the consumers here could be the patients, they can be the clinicians, the administrators, pharma companies. I think that is what really sets the great founders mm-hmm. apart. It's about company building, effectively. Mm-hmm. And I think that the best founders I work with are, you know, they may not be coming from the health system per se, but they combine a clear vision and couple that with naivety. I think having a, you know, first principles approach to a problem and to a space actually enables them to take on challenges that others may not be able to solve. Or if they actually knew how difficult it was to solve them, wouldn't have taken on the challenge. Yeah. And so I think it's those things that I think are setting founders apart.
I think it was actually, you mentioned NVIDIA before, I think it was actually Jensen who said recently that if he had known how hard it will be to build this, he would just not, you know, even start doing it.
Exactly. You know what else he said, which I absolutely love? He had this interview where he said, as I was thinking about what we were building, I kept saying, how hard can it be?
Exactly. Yeah. Julia, in your view, like maybe getting back to that health care and health tech, in your view, how can tech, you know, help solve the scarcity of clinicians and improve ease of access for patients, particularly, you know, in today's strained healthcare systems?
Yeah. I think about that in two ways. I think about it, one, in terms of technology that's making an inefficient system more efficient. And those can be, you know, companies, whether it's like Accurix or others that are enabling, you know, clinicians to access software that really improves their day-to-day life, whether it's sending an SMS message to a patient or enabling them to communicate. Mm-hmm. That's one piece. The other piece is around technology that is essentially transformative at its core, which enables things like early detection and making that mainstream, or image scanning in every GP surgery, or, you know, something that's truly transformative that changes how we basically are viewing health and taking action on it. And I think the truth is that we need both of these things.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's how I think about it.
Mm. Julia, so Local Globe and you guys have, you know, such a distinct presence in VC. What do you think, you know, what's one thing you believe your firm does differently in backing founders from seed to scale?
I think that, you know, what founders tell us that we do differently, because I do ask this. I think it's one, it's the fact that we love building companies. We're not just thinking about the product or just the founder, but we're talking about the company, the team, the individuals that are going to essentially be building what will become a transformative, whether it's a product or a solution that's solving a real problem in society.
Yeah.
Two, I think we obsess about what happens if everything goes right. And so we dream with the founders. And then I think the other thing that we do is that we're values-based. We have very clearly defined values that unite us. And I think this really helps us especially when things are difficult. You can orientate yourself when you have values. And then finally, we obviously have a foundation, which is called Phoenix Court Works. And this takes and gets access to capital from a share of not only profits from our management company, but also a share of carry across all the funds. And then that gets basically donated to local organizations, so hyper-local impacts. And I think these things are the ingredients to what makes us different.
I love it. And you say that you you dream with founders. So do you visualize a lot, like how it's going to be in the future? When, like, how do you?
Yeah. Definitely. I think
you manifest these things.
One of the core things that we do is that we work with founders to write the Wikipedia article entry for the company in 10 years' time. Mm-hmm. The founders obviously write it, and then we do a session to talk about it.
This is awesome.
Actually, it was one of our founders who did it. It was Ronan and Reki. He did the first, when he was starting to talk to us years ago, this was one of the things that he did. And we thought it was so great to enable us all to align on the vision.
Yeah.
It also actually facilitates a discussion around the struggles and the challenges and the criticisms, because that's obviously a core part of the Wikipedia too. We do this as an exercise. And I think it's a really important part of, before you get into the nitty gritty on like what are you going to deliver in the next 18 to 24 months? Let's align on the big picture.
I love it. Julia, from deep tech to health, what future intersections of these fields excite you the most? Like, how do you see them potentially, you know, reshaping how we understand and treat health in the next decade?
Yeah, I would say the obvious answer to this is obviously health and AI.
Yeah.
And I would say that, you know, AI is transforming, you know, almost every part of health. And it is, I would say, the killer use case for AI, both in terms of like data-driven insights for patients as well as clinicians, diagnostics, clinical note-taking, where we've seen several companies taking off and getting to product market fit incredibly quickly, which is so exciting to see. Back office function companies, as well as obviously what's being done in drug discovery and clinical trials for that matter. So literally every part of healthcare is being affected by this technology. But I would also say that I'm really excited about the potential for some other deep technologies. And I would say, like, where there is a true scientific or engineering breakthrough, such as like using photonics in healthcare, or advanced materials in healthcare, or what happens when you bring together like new materials, sensors, electrochemistry, AI, software, all of these things. And I think that's really exciting.
I love it. That's indeed really exciting. Julia, do you have any, speaking about exciting stuff, do you have any, exciting new initiatives or projects that you'd like to share with the audience?
Within healthcare, you mean?
It can be within healthcare, within Local Globe, or outside of it, just your personal stuff.
Well, I guess at Local Globe, we're doing quite a lot of work in deep tech, broadly speaking. And so the team, we now have a small group that is working on that. It's myself, it's Mish, Ferdy, Ash, Charles, who's our talent lead, and Ambi, as well as Paul, is basically, we've been working quite a lot to unpick, you know, what do we mean by deep tech? What's the definition that we've aligned on? We've looked at our existing portfolio, and then thinking through, like, where are the areas that we are really excited about, and how do we then go about building communities of founders and operators that can support these companies. So I think that's an internal initiative that I'm like super excited about.
That's amazing. Julia, thank you so much for the time you took to spend with us here. It's been amazing to have you on the show. I loved the conversation. I think people love it too. I'm sure people love it too. And thanks so much. And I hope to see you soon.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.